हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। प्रभुपाद की जय। ओके सो देन ब्रह्म संहिता देन ऑन चैप्टर 5 टेक्स्ट 30 No, is it text 37? The Gopis and the 64 Arts. I worship Govinda, the primeval lord, residing in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure, Nijarupa Daya, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency possessed of the 64 artistic activities. In the company of her confidence, Sakis, embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever blissful spiritual rasa. So then, now then, on Swakya and Parakya rasa. The verse translated above is by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. An alternative reading based on Jiva Goswami's commentary is as follows. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who, though regarding all the inhabitants as his very self, resides in Goloka exclusively with the young gopis, who are embodiments of Madhura Rasa. He accepts them as his wives, Nija Rupa Daya, while they respond to his conjugal affection reciprocally. The main distinction between these two translations is the term Nija Rupa Daya, which Jiva Goswami takes to support the Swakya nature of the supreme couple's relationship. Quote, in Goloka, he accepts them as his own wives, Nija Rupa Daya, though during his pastimes on earth, he accepts them as other person's wives, because it is impossible that they are other person's wives, since they are the supreme Lakshmis or consorts of the Lord. In order to increase the sense of longing in his pastimes on earth, there is an appearance of their being others' wives by covering the pastime of their actually being his wives alone. This occurs through his own Maya. During the pastimes on earth, he resides with them while treating them as others' wives. Whereas in Goloka, the place of his unmanifested pastime, he lives with them as his own consorts. This distinguishes his behavior in Goloka from that during his early pastimes. Dikdarshini Tika, 5:37. This passage is famous within the Gaudiya Vaishnava canon for sparking controversy among immature critics. Some parties attempt to use this statement to foment false discord between Vaishnava acharyas, claiming that Jiva Goswami stands in opposition to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in his view that only Swakya Ras exists in Braja. Although the grossly misinformed and offensive nature of this charge might tempt one to ignore it, the manner in which it was addressed by our preceptors is highly instructive. Their statements provide valuable lessons on dealing with different types of materially conditioned opponents, that be they mundane moralists or sahajiyas, Srila Prabhupada states. According to another Sahajiya accusation, Srila Jiva Goswami did not approve of the principles of the Parakya Rasa of Vraja Dham, and therefore supported Swakya Rasa, showing that Radha and Krishna are eternally married. Actually, when Jiva Goswami was alive, some of his followers disliked the Parakya Rasa of the gopis. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami, for their spiritual benefit, supported the Swakya Rasa, for he could understand that Sahajiyas would otherwise exploit the Parakya Rasa, as they are actually doing at the present time. Unfortunately, in Vrindavan and Navadvipa, it has become fashionable among Sahajiyas in their debauchery to find an unmarried sexual partner to live with, to execute so-called devotional service in Parakiya Rasa. Foreseeing this, Srila Jiva Goswami supported Swakiya Rasa, and later all the Vaishnavacharyas also approved of it. Srila Jiva Goswami was never opposed to the transcendental Parakiya Rasa, nor has any other Vaishnav disapproved of it. C.C. Adi Leela 1085. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his commentary to this verse, writes perhaps his lengthiest purport of the whole Brahma Samhita. Space considerations prevent us from reprinting his essay in full, yet it is essential reading for anyone desiring a greater appreciation for the absolute purity of Krishna Lila. Rather than focus on such lofty theological considerations as Krishna's relationship with the gopis, the excerpts below revolve around cultivating the proper attitude for entering into such discussions in the first place. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta establishes that there can be no contradiction amongst charyas in parampara. So this is a very essential point, because otherwise, as he mentions, you know, have made the point before, is that those who are immature like to find these controversies, because is that the living entity is looking for taste, and if he's not getting on the spiritual platform, he'll try to get on the material platform. So that's why gossip is so popular, is because it creates an intensity, right? When there's a gossip, there's something, oh, is it this? Oh, is it that? Oh, no, what's this and that? You know, new thing, oh, all over, it's just an experience. So the point is, gossip is an experience. It's not about what's being talked about, because if you bring up, let's say somebody brings up some gossip that's never been heard, and they're, oh, no, what's this? Oh, this crazy. And then if after discussing it, they moved on to some other topic, if someone else runs into the room, you know, in a frantic thing, oh, did you hear the latest thing? Oh, what's that? And then you say with the gossip, oh, yeah, we already know that. Who cares? You know, that's so 20 minutes ago, you know, like that. So the whole point is, it's just something to create some emotion and some feelings. And so therefore, then the immature do exactly the same thing. And it doesn't matter, you know, what the position. We see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has made this point. There can be no contradiction between the acharyas and the parampara. So that means, from Srila Prabhupada back to Rupa Goswami, that what's in between there will be never any contradiction. It may be bringing out a different angle, like I could talk about, it's a nice case, like that. It does, it holds things very nicely and everything like that. You know, it has a nice little green light, like that. Or I could look at it from the aesthetic point of view, how nice it is and rounded and smooth and simple and all that. Everything's, fitted in very nicely like that. Or I could talk about, you can make this and it costs this much and this and that and everything like that. Like that, I could talk about the thing, it's very sturdy, it's very sturdy. If you drop it, then because it's in two pieces, maximum it'll break into its two pieces. It will not break into three. So you don't have to worry about it breaking into three. You only have to worry about it breaking into two. So right there, that's four different discussions on the same thing. And you could say that they're contradictory. Oh, but you said it was a very nice design, but then you said it may break. But the point is, one's talking about its durability, one's talking about its aesthetics and that aspect of simplicity. So that's the whole point, is for those who find contradiction means they don't understand enough to see the principle. That's there on that intellectual element or that emotional element. But the other aspect is, why would you look for it? In other words, if it seems contradictory, right? Means, why would you be looking for fault? Because what's the point of fault? If I find fault, then I don't have to regard, right? And if I don't have to regard, means I don't have to follow. And I don't have to follow, then I'm free. I can do whatever I want. And that is the reason for these things. Oh, because then it comes down. This one says this is a contradictory. So how do I work it out? I work it out with my own brain. I'm the only authority. I'm the only one I can trust because everybody else is untrustworthy. So we see again, it's just a matter of lack of faith. And in this, even though generally we try to be very kind on these things, on this one, I'm not going to be kind. It's just lack of faith and having other motives in mind. It's a mundane confusion. Because the spiritual point is there is no contradiction amongst the acharyas in Parampara. Right? So therefore, what Srila Prabhupada says, what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, you know, what the previous Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Vidyabhushan, Narottam Das Thakur, Krishnadas Kaviraj, then the six Goswamis, what they say in their literature is there's no contradiction. Now, if somebody's already very nicely elucidated on a point, they may, and there's more points that you could bring out, especially for the situation. It's been written at this point, and then with time, there's other people have other considerations. So then they may comment on those. And so they're just expanding on what's there, just like we'll give a talk and we'll try to make it relevant to whoever's hearing. Like Srila Prabhupada makes the point that you could say with the founder acharya, with the previous acharyas, they're giving absolute knowledge, and we're giving a relevant knowledge. So in other words, we're speaking on the absolute knowledge given by the acharyas and trying to make it relevant for who's listening, right? Because it's not our knowledge. This is coming from the acharyas, coming down from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's not that it's us doing this. This is a matter of that we are speaking in a way according to our understanding and in such a way that the audience may appreciate. That's what's going on. So you may use examples or different things and bring out different angles and all that. So that's what we can do, what we can add. We simply try to make it more clear what the acharyas are saying. It's not that, okay, that's one opinion, we have a different. No, it's whatever's there, we try to shed some light on it. Right, that's the idea. So Dik Darshani Tika, right? That means looking at, you know, Dik Darshani means from all the directions, and Darshan means to see or to appreciate, to realize. So how to see it from different angles? That's then what is being brought up. That's Vichar. Vichar means to discuss. Right. So now, from the purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The devotional activities characterized by illicit amor, as practiced by worldly-minded conditioned souls, are forbidden mundane impiety. The heart of our apostle, Sripad Jiva Goswami, was very much moved by such practices, and induced him to give us his conclusive statements on the subject. It is the duty of a pure Vaishnav to accept the real spirit of his statements. It is a great offense to disrespect the Acharya and to seek to establish a different doctrine in opposition to him. There are some who, being unable to understand the drift of his statements, give meaning of their own invention and indulge in useless controversies. Right? That's the point. Statements of their own invention and useless controversies. That's the point what I'm saying is you can say, no, no, but this is an intellectual think, no, it's not. It's that giving inventions and all that, see, is in the modern, is that you invent different things from different angles, come up with a new thing, and then that gives you one, a uniqueness, and so thus an identity, and you stand out amongst the crowd of speculators, and it can be respected because you're just saying you have a different angle. But at the same time, is, you know, they can all speculate, you can speculate, so everybody can speculate. That's the value. So therefore, I was speculating away in my uniqueness. You can speculate in yours, and we could have a basis of discussion or argument or disagreement and all that. But at any time, any of us can change our angle to something else. So it's not that it's fixed in stone, right? We just like to find, you know, fault. That's all. We're fault finders. In fact, Sripad Jiva Goswami has come to the true conclusion. And at the same time, the finding of the opposing party is also inconceivably true. It is the vain empirical wranglings about wedding wifehood and concubinage, which is false and full of specious verbosity, right? Specious verbosity. Just kind of verbosity. So many words are being used, but it's all just useless. It's all false. Right, they can speak so nicely and bring out, oh, but what about this angle and that, and taking this word and taking the root? It sounds so nice, but it's useless. He who goes through the commentaries of Sripad Jiva Goswami and those of the opposing party with an impartial judgment cannot maintain his attitude of protest engendered by any real doubt. What the unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Lord says is all true and is independent of any consideration of unwholesome pros and cons. There is, however, the element of mystery in their verbal controversies. Those whose judgment is made of mundane stuff, being unable to enter into the spirit of the all-loving controversies among pure devotees, due to their own want of unalloyed devotion, are apt to impugn to the devotees their own defects of partisanship and opposing views. Right, because they are actually functioning, or in this context, thinking on the material plane. So they're going to attribute their own defects of partisanship on opposing views on the acharya in this case. So that's generally what you do, is you take your material context and project that on others and then point out their fault. You have that fault. You find that fault in others by projecting your values on them, using your values as the measurement, and then saying there's a fault and seeing they're wrong. When in here, it's the absolute judgments that's there. So our mundane concept, our mundane views cannot be the measurement by which you judge the absolute truth and the acharyas. So that just doesn't work. It's not a point of discussion. Oh, you guys are just blindly following. No, it's a matter of faith. Means that you've analyzed it. You've seen this is good. You have faith. Blind faith means you just take it without any analyzation, without knowing. But the point is, as we've seen on all the different aspects, that the acharyas are correct. So we have faith in what they're saying, and the acharyas point out there can be no contradiction. So therefore, we accept that. If we want to say, oh, but you can't say anything absolute, that's just our feelings of enmity towards Krishna, that there is no absolute truth. We make ourselves, no, we're the center of the universe. Everything that goes on has to be in line with what I want and what my needs. My views. So therefore, there can't be anything beyond that. That's an absolute, that my position is actually judged by. No, everything else is judged by my position. So we can see is that this goes to the very root of I'm the controller and enjoyer, and why we have, you know, somehow or another, by some great misfortune, turned away from Krishna. So therefore, we have to be very, very careful that when you get down to this level, unless you're on the liberated platform, then you shouldn't try to project your own views as standard, because only on the liberated platform, then they can look at it in a clear way, right? The more the eye of devotion is tinged with a salve of love, the more will the transcendental concept gradually manifest itself. So there's no need of further hypothetical speculation, which does not improve one's spiritual appreciation. As the substantial knowledge of Goloka is an inconceivable entity, right? It means all the knowledge of Goloka is an inconceivable, it's so far beyond it, that how much is there, it's unlimited. So it's beyond the scope of our appreciation. But the more the eye of devotion is tinged with the salve of love, the more the transcendental concept gradually manifests itself. In other words, the knowledge of that is there in Golok, that chit potency, it will manifest as we have devotion. It's not that, no, I did this, I studied, and therefore that's why I know. No, you applied devotion, and therefore Krishna revealed. Like that, if we think it's because I read from page this to that, and I read every word of that, and I know a little Sanskrit, and I'm really good in grammar and things like that, and vocabulary, therefore now I understand it. There's no, not at all, not the transcendental. It's because Krishna reveals himself. That's the only reason. So that's the point. We apply ourselves to the process, and Krishna reciprocates. That's the way it goes. If we want to have, no, I did it, I get it, then that's not how it works. You have to know what something is, because we're in the illusion that I'm in control of everything. But the point is, it's just like, you, let's say you have a chair. You can say, it's my chair, and I sit in it when I want, how I want, why I want. Yeah, okay, that's your choice. But the potency for the chair to hold you off the ground, we're not doing. The chair itself has that potency. We don't have that. We're not imbuing the chair with that potency. Krishna is. So therefore, then, since it's Krishna's potency that's making the chair into a chair, therefore, we have to use the chair within the guidelines that Krishna gives on what is chairness and chairhood. We can't go outside that. We can say, but that's just talk. That's insanity of the conditioned living entity. So we have to appreciate that. No, it's a chair. So you don't have the control of it being a chair or not. Because otherwise, if you did, then for a practical joke, invite your friend to sit in the chair, and then you yourself remove the potency of chairness that's there. And, you know, the guy will end up on the ground. And then after a good laugh and all that, then you put the chairness back. And then he can sit there and chuckle about it. Oh, got me that time. Yeah. And then what you don't know is he's about to remove the floorness from under you. So even though you're there in your chair and it has its chairness, but then the floor doesn't have its floorness, so then you and your chair fall through the floor, and then he laughs about it. Right? So we can't do that because we're not in charge of the potency. We don't have control. We can decide to take part in a process that's already existing. But it's not that you are in, you know, there's always that need to feel I'm in control. But then if I say that, oh, but then where's the free will? Well, you know, where am I in control? How am I the supreme enjoyer? That's the doubt. And it's that means it's been there. It's always been there because every living entity thinks I'm the control and enjoyer. They don't want to address that I'm not. Say the car is there. Okay, but I can drive the car. Like that, yeah, but you can only drive the car as the car says. You can't sit in the back seat, look out the back window, and then, you know, start tapping on the headrest in the back seat, and that starts the car, and then you go vroom, vroom, and you go down the road. No, you have to sit in the front seat. You have to put there. You have to put your feet on the right pedals. You can't push on the brake and expect it to go forward. You know, you move the steering wheel. When it goes one way, the car goes that way. It goes the other way. It goes that way. You have the gears. You can't do, you know, you can't do 300 Ks in first gear, you know, unless it's a Koenigsegg. Yeah. But other than that, then, you know, it can't be done. So the point is that you have to follow the laws. You voluntarily take part. Okay, I want to take part in the laws governing this car and, you know, in the potency the car has to take you from point A to point B. And I will cooperate with the law, so therefore when it's time to turn, I'll move the wheel. I won't just go, no, it's just if the potency isn't doing, let them do it. But since when did they invite you to come in and sit in the car? Right? And at the same time, it says, no, I said it should be this way, therefore I'm going to take this, you know, hairpin corner at 120 Ks, and, you know, it shouldn't go off the road. But it will. It does. In fact, it'll roll. So that's the thing, is that we can take part in something that's going on. You can't change it. You know, just like people are in an orchestra, they can take part in what's going on there. They can't decide that, well, I'm going to do some boogie woogie here, you know, during, you know, classical performance. I'm going to sit there in the back on my, you know, whatever it is, musical instrument, and I'm going to do some far out. As much as we take part in what's around us, the circumstances we're in line with the circumstances that are there. Right? So when we appreciate that, then we appreciate the acharyas are delivering to us this flow of the chit potency. And we can connect with that if we have that faith and understanding and that devotion that we try to then understand it in the light that they're giving, then it will be revealed. But otherwise, if you don't, there's a saying, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Right? So that's the point, is the acharyas can deliver the conclusions of the absolute truth, but unless we are willing to accept it, it's not going to happen. Right? So it's by Krishna reveals himself through his internal potency when we have that devotion, when we're doing it in devotion. Right? You can say, oh, but what about people who don't have devotion? Like when we go out and preach, they don't have devotion. They're being purified where you remove the obstacles, the impurities that are there from mundane consciousness. So now they could go, oh yeah, that makes sense. Krishna's revealing, but they're applying as you get there. Now, when you have Shraddha, now it's open for prema. Before that, it means for the regular person, the goal you can get them to is Shraddha. And then in that point of Shraddha, now they can move forward to prema. Right? So this idea that, you know, it has to be the way we say and this and that, yeah, that's the... Okay, continuing. To try to pursue the inconceivable by the conceptual process is like pounding the empty husk of grain, which is sure to have a fruitless ending. Right? So when he says that, it means just like that. You try to understand, you're just going to deal with the external, because what's the external? It's the mundane consciousness. So you're simply going to be taking some spiritual point that's being made by Guru Sadhana Shastra, and then you're going to apply your external intellect onto that. So all you can deal with is the covering. So it's like pounding the husk of grain. You'll get nothing. You will not understand what it says in Goloka. Yes, please.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. I just wanted to confirm that is, it seems like this what part is the Sahajayas, and those who they absolutely can't accept that how the Lord has these conjugal affairs, they both have that they rely too much on their own vision. That one is they, okay, Lord does it so we can also do it. Another is that, oh no, we shouldn't do it, therefore Lord also shouldn't do it.
Yes, yes, very, very much. Yeah. Very much. Because this point is a problem. Like I met one couple, husband's, you know, initiated devotee, wife wasn't initiated, but a devotee, and she wouldn't worship Krishna, right? She worshiped Ram, because Ram is, you know, he has one wife, he does everything nicely, but Krishna's off with so many girls and all that, so she said he's impious, so she would not worship Krishna. You know, she doesn't bother the husband in his worship, but she wouldn't worship him. You know, she'll go to the temple for programs and this and that, but her deity is Ram. So it's the same kind of point, because Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbha, then he makes the point that these things are written by me because of the view of others. Like that. I wouldn't write like this. But because they see like that, then he has to go out of the context of the... Means he's presenting about rasa, but he's presenting from the position of tattva. Right? Because Krishna in his internal potency, they're eternally connected. So you could say his consort is as good as wife, right? But the point is but he takes the flavor as if in here, but in Goloka, then they don't. That way, that at least they have the idea, okay, it looks like that here, but there, you know, so there's some way that they could adjust with it. And the other point is then for the Sahajiyas, is you can't do that here. You can't say, oh, I'm doing this and this and that. No, it's a matter of They do that in Goloka. So if you're here with a material body, you can't do these pastimes. That's for the sahaja is. Right? And the other is, oh, it looks like it's here, but in actuality, in Goloka, it's not. Right? So that kind of thing, he's just saying that because they have these, you know, as he mentioned here, their own hypothetical speculation. They take their own values. So one has no morality, you know, and the other one has too much mundane morality. They're not able to see what's the purpose of morality. So they think it's the morality itself, which is the standard for devotional service. No, devotional service works whether someone's moral or not. And as you're moral, it works better. But it's not that you have to be moral for it to work. Otherwise, how did Dasaratnakar or Magrari the hunter, how did they become devotees? How did the prostitute of Benipol become a devotee? Right? Because we see is prostitute comes, sits with Haridas Thakur while he chants, does that, I think, for, I'm not sure, I think it was a few days, maybe 3 days. And then after that, then he revealed, you know, she revealed, you know, what was actually happening because she became purified, that she was hired by this particular zamindar to create trouble. And he said, I knew that, you know, but I was just, you know, for your benefit chanting so that you'd be purified. He left, she went back, gave away all her possessions, you know, shaved her head, took a bath, put on white and sat down, therefore, at Haridas Thakur's Bhajan Kutir, and that, and started chanting, you know, chanting all day. Right? How does that happen in 3 days? Right? That's the power of the holy name. Was she, during those 3 days, she was no longer, you know, impure because of her position? Normal? No, because point is that she accepted, she heard the holy name, accepted the shelter of the Vaishnava. And so then it did. So what did that? Did she do some mundane pious activity? No. There was nothing there. And so then even in the position as a prostitute being exposed to the holy name and the association of the pure devotee, then she became pure. Right? And could take up seriously devotional service. So that's the point, is devotional service is beyond mundane morality. So when people try to project their own sense of morality on the gopis, because who's doing this? The sahajiyas who don't have the morality, they're projecting their own position. And someone who has it, it's not the people who, you know, don't have a problem with this moral issue. Either way, it's not too extreme one way or the other. Then they're not the ones with the problem. It's the ones who identify, I'm a moral person. I follow the rules. Means Bhaktivinoda Thakur said there's two kinds of those who identify as a good person. One who he always follows the rules, right? That's the idea. I always follow the rules. So he will look and see others aren't following the rules. That's the weakness. Then the other one is I never break the rules, right? He's more on the negative. I never do anything wrong. Therefore, anything else anyone does wrong, he sees that as a fault. So in either way, you think you're in a superior position and others who aren't on your level are inferior. But just one is, I follow the rules. That's why I'm a good person. Oh, I don't break the rules. That's why I'm a good person. You understand? So you have these two. Well, one will tend to be more positive and they just do their thing and others aren't doing so. Yeah, they're not that. The other ones, no, I never break them. So then they can point out fault in everybody. So it's just a matter of how much fault finding they want. So, and then you have the sahajas who don't have that morality. And so therefore they think that their lack of morality, that's them and their devotees. So therefore how they view it is okay. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yes, Bhagavati.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is a mail. I want to only clarify the understanding. because some few times I was reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam purport, Srila Prabhupada explained that when you are not on the platform of following strictly four regulative principles, then there is no question of devotional service and how to connect with what you explain now.
Because devotion means that you're trying to move forward, means you have a standard. Because see, is here is that the power of devotional service is there. But the point is then you can say, is, well, what's your devotion if you're not trying to follow the process? Right? And so then the point is then in that area, you have to see is where's the devotion. So if you're chanting the holy name, because you should like that, but then let's say you're doing something else that's not a thing, then that's where the weakness will be. It's not in your chanting your japa. Right? Does that make sense? So you're going to have these overlays because too easily, because generally speaking, for the conditions, so we work on our view of things is binary, right? It's one or a zero. So it's either 100% fabulous, first class, or zero, absolute nothing, and there's nothing devotional about it. So we have to appreciate is, yes, that's the standard. How are you going to move forward if that's the position? How is that a devotional situation? So therefore, then, what things that you are doing, you have to see is that what you're doing is in line with Krishna consciousness. And so you're trying to make everything you do in line with Krishna consciousness. Right? So the four regulative principles then are, see, the four regulative principles are those areas that create, how you say, they are the shelter for the maximum expression of lust, anger, greed, and envy, right? Through the medium of illusion and madness, right? There's the illusion, and then when that increases more, then it goes into madness. So meat eating then creates it creates an intensity that something else doesn't, right? Because someone else who, let's say they're a vegetarian or a vegan, but they're not offering anything to Krishna, then they're still sinful, but it doesn't create the intensity of meat eating. Does that make sense? Same with illicit sex. It creates an intensity, you know, say intoxication, that just puts you straight into, you know, illusion and madness. I think it's said if you take LSD seven times, then you can be clinically confirmed as insane. You know, like that. You know, it's just that. And gambling, they get so much into it. No, I can put in nothing and get back unlimited. And they go crazy. So that's why these four are avoided, because they're just too heavy to deal with. They just are too distracting. But you see, plenty of people go nuts by trying to make money or have power or have knowledge or their skill and their fame and this and that. But it generally takes a bit longer. The others can work very quickly. But basically anything in the material world is designed that you will go crazy. Right? You know, because that's what it said, Prabhupada was mentioning. People who are insane, it's just too much material desire. Right. That's why it says that chanting Om, Omkara, that can bring them more back into sanity, because they won't be able to necessarily do anything else. They can make funny noises, so you can get them to chant Om. So if you want to cure madness, then you just get those who are too crazy to chant Hare Krishna, they can chant that. So the holy name is beyond those things, that it will work. But the point is you're following Bhajana Kriya. So, because through Bhajana Kriya and that, you'll get yourself, you know, up to Devriti, then into the thing, you'll get that faith, you'll move on. But the holy name is not affected by these rules. That doesn't, but the point is if you're breaking the rules intentionally, then the process is going, it's offensive. So the holy name will respond in that way. If it's something that it's not, it's not being done in the mood of offensiveness, that you're thinking, I do this activity and I can chant Hare Krishna and remove this, right? I can do the activity, then after purify myself by chanting like that. Or because I'm chanting, I won't become impure. These kind of things is there. But if it's just you get distracted, then that is the you know, it's not an offense. It's impure. It's mixed devotional service, or it's, you know, mixed with sinful activity. So therefore, it's not going to be useful in devotional service. So the point is how do you correct it? Just do what's supposed to be done. But now in your point is, yes, it won't be favorable for moving forward in devotional service. So that's the point. It's not favorable because it should be favorable to Krishna. It should be favorable for devotional service. Should be favorable to Krishna without karma jnana. So then sinful activities means you're dealing in karma. And it's not favorable to Krishna. It's not for Krishna. So therefore, it doesn't fall into the definition. But because you're chanting on the order of Guru, why are you chanting? Are you chanting because, you know, it's a sinful thing or it's a mundane thing? So you're going to have that mix there. But the point is if you don't make these strong points, people will think that it doesn't matter, like Jiva Goswami is saying for the Sahajiyas, right? And the Acharyas understand why he's saying it, and they approve his message, right? Because the point is when you get up to that level, then it becomes understandable, right? Because they're trying to do it from the level of taste and this and morality and all these different things. But no, they don't understand actual morality or actual taste. Does that make sense? But the holy name is still there. If you're associated with devotees and all that, it still has an effect. But now, how much do you want to take part? You want to take part, then you try to give these things up. If you don't want to take part, you don't worry about it. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, the typical kind of thing, you have the brahmachari and he just loves to eat so much, right? Eat halava, eat whatever he can get his hands on. Now, what we see is that much eating is not favorable for advancing devotionally, right? Because by eating so much, then, you know, one is you're just thinking about eating. And two is by eating so much, you can't always be as active as you should be, because after eating that much, you need to take a nap or you can't move around as much. You know, you're restricted in what you can do. So it's not favorable. And also, health-wise, that's not going to be good, this, that, blah. But if you look at it, what are they eating? They're eating prasad. So the effect of prasad is still going to be there. So they do like that. And after 6 months, a year, you see that they eat less. They get purified. So the point is that these things going on, they still advance, you know, or he's attached to sleeping, he's attached to this or that, whatever. By following the process, it gets better, you know. Or let's say for the householder, he has so many possessions and he, you know, wants his needs to get money, get this and that, so many things that may be distracting him from, you know, just being nicely absorbed in the holy name. But it's because he's chanting and all that and trying to do the holy name purifies him and he moves forward, right? You know, just for example, you see in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, so many of the devotees are grihasthas, you know, and they're very exemplary. Or in the Bhagavatam, when you have the list of the kings, basically except for, what's his name? Not Paranjana, not Prachina Barhishat. Priyavrata. He was a brahmachari. So he's the only kshatriya in the Bhagavatam, basically, the Pandavas maybe before they get married, but I think in the Bhagavatam they're already married. And he's not married. So many of these great kings are emperor of the world, you know, Dhruva's emperor of the universe. And, you know, they're nicely situated as devotees. Or Palad Maharaj, okay, yeah, he's as a kid, then he's not, but then later that he takes up, you know, after his father goes and he becomes the king. And then he's running everything very nicely. And you see is how they can do all that in devotional service. So one has to appreciate that devotional service has that power. That's because of devotional service. not us. So therefore, we don't take advantage of that power. Right? Because that's unfavorable. But to say that anybody who's did anything, there's no devotional service, they weren't a devotee, never are a devotee, never will be a devotee, that kind of stuff, that's unimportant. That's then what we're talking about here, hypothetical speculation. It doesn't improve one's spiritual appreciation like that. You know, you may have to be very strong depending on where you are. Like I've seen in some areas of the world, in some yatras, they can be more liberal with devotees that have problems and all that, and they move forward because there's more of a sense of duty or a sense of justice or, you know, sense of responsibility. But I've seen in other yatras and that, and they can't give an inch because as soon as they do, they'll all take advantage. So the leadership has to be extremely strict just to hold the place together. So you have to see is what's going to work for the mentalities that you're working with. But the general point is this is unfavorable. And so you're not situated nicely in devotional service. So you have to adjust that to be nicely situated. Does that make any sense?
I will think about it, Maharaj. It's not completely clear for me, but I will think about it. I was not questioning the power of the devotional service, but I just, I'm a little afraid when somebody will listen that there is no generally the question that you have to be so much focused for the regulations and things like this, but the sadhana bhakti, the vaidhi bhakti is generally the based on the regulations.
No, what you do and what you don't do. So four related principles is what you avoid. Then there's all the things you do. You're chanting, you know, you're going to Mangalarti, you're associating with devotees, you're worshiping the deities, you're hearing Bhagavatam, living in the Dham. Though that's Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti is not following the four regular principles. Those are the things you give up so you can follow the four regular principles. I mean, you can follow the devotional principles. Does that make sense?
Yes, I was not arguing that sadhana bhakti is these four regulative principles. I have a little problem when we start to say that generally we only are going to the bhakti and we are not so much taking care about the principles or even that, okay, if you are so much based on the principles that it's not so much good, it can lead the people that, okay, we are not taking care about the principles, we will be simply doing this bhakti and mitsahajyas. There have to be the balance between this both, if I understand clearly.
Yes, of course. So the point is that you're saying that devotional service is the powerful element, it's the primary, and all the other things are there to support. Why then one would have to see is that isn't in support of the sahajya. And then to say is no, the secondary things, unless they're there, then you can't have bhakti, then you're going to be saying that karma is the main. So the point is that you take all these together, that's the package. You know, it's like we discussed before, it's like you cook something and that itself is the main item. Then you can add so many nice things around it. You know, what you're eating it in, you know, what's the environment around, all those different things. But it's what you're eating is the importance. So the devotional service is the important. It improves with all these other things. So the point is that pure devotional service means you're free from karma and gyan. So breaking the four related principles is, you know, in the area of karma, right? But all these mental speculations and all that, that's all in the area of gyan. So it's not pure devotional service. It's going to be mixed. So you want to situate yourself in pure devotional service. So when you talk about pure devotional service, it means you're doing all the things that have to be done for that.
Yes, now I understand. There is a difference between the pure devotional service and the mixed.
Yes, because pure devotion is the result of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti gets you to pure devotion. So that's why then Baladeva Vidyabhushan then makes the point that anyavilasita, the ita means in pursuance of pure devotion, even that is counted amongst as pure devotion. Even though you're not on the uttama platform, but you have determination to get there, then you're included in that group. Right? So, but if you get distracted from that and then start thinking that all these other things are the important element, you put too much emphasis on all those, then it doesn't work out. Let's say, like in the kitchen, you have somebody there who's assisting and all that. And you say, okay, can you cut up these vegetables? You know, I'll need them in 10 minutes. So you come back after, 8 minutes, and they've only, maybe cut one of the potatoes out of the whole pile. And you say, oh, but I'm going to need these quick. And says, no, but you have to do this exactly, hold it like this and this, put down, give the pressure and all that. And I'm doing this perfectly. And see, each one of these potatoes is exactly the same size. And so that's the important thing. And you're saying, no, the cooking is the important thing. Your cutting vegetables has to support the cooking. Does that make sense? So that's why the rules are there. Yeah, you do everything nice. If the potatoes are the same size when you cook, it makes the cooking go well because then everything cooks at the same time. But it's about the cooking. And then the size of the potatoes are in support of cooking. So it's always the point is that the primary is the main and the secondary are seen in support of. And as long as that support is seen, then you can balance it.
But otherwise, for the devotee who is cutting, this cutting is primary. It's not secondary.
Yeah. But the point is he there and all he's going to do is cut potatoes and then walk off. And then he's done his devotional. That's it. Nobody cooks the potatoes.
Yeah, I understand. But I don't know how to explain. It can be, okay, I can cut like I want to because it's not primary. You understand my point? He is coming and I told him, okay, cut the vegetables. Okay, he is cutting like he like because it's not primary and because the primary is the
cooking. No, but how does not primary mean that you can do whatever you like? If you can't speculate on primary, you also can't speculate on secondary. Primary and secondary have laws, they're Krishna's rules. We're simply meaning that the mechanics of something is what has to be followed. Because when we say secondary, means driving the car to get to the temple is secondary. Getting to the temple, wanting to go to the temple, that's the primary. But that doesn't mean now I can drive however I like. I have to drive in such a way I get to the temple. I have to follow the laws that govern the vehicle in getting the temple. So when we say it's secondary, doesn't mean that it's not important. It just means that it's in support of the primary, just like the Vedic is in support of the Pancharatrik, and the Pancharatrik is in support of the Bhagavat. So that's how we're dealing here. Now the Pancharatrik then is the formalized form of Bhagavat. So therefore, it has all the rules and regulations. The Bhagavad is spontaneous. So even though they're both primary, is that I'm trying to get to the spontaneous program. I'm following the Pancharatrik because that will bring me to that spontaneous position. And at the same time, I'm still going to be worshiping Krishna, chanting the holy name, taking puja, doing all those things. It's not going to change. It's just the mentality will change. But the Vedic, that, has all the rules and all that we're worried about. Like following the four regular principles in the Vedic, it's actually tertiary. And so that then is there because that keeps you on those paths. Because if you get distracted by that, like Ajamil, he got distracted. He wasn't doing his devotional service. Right? So, but as soon as he chanted the holy name, then he came back to that. So what we're saying is it's the name that's the main thing. So one has to see is now, like we're saying, if you're dealing with people that are looking for any excuse to not follow something, then you have to be very careful how you explain it. But the point is if you have those that understand about the primary and secondary, and you're trying to point out the primary, then that makes it work. Like we see is that when we're dealing with the primary and secondary, it's about devotional service. So it's not about, like we're saying, about the bureaucracy and all these different things like that. It's not about power. It's the temple president has authority because it engages people in Krishna consciousness. But now if we see there's a fight over authority, then you could say is on that platform, well, how is that devotional? Because the point is the secondary has to support the primary. But if it's just on its own and not supportive, then it takes on the material context, because it's the same thing that goes either way, right? You have a building, but you use it for Krishna, it's a temple. You have a building, you don't use it for Krishna, it's just a building, right? So that's the point, is the secondary is mechanical, that can be used either way. While the primary is, it's about Krishna. That's the main thing. So my mood to serve Krishna is the main. Or let's say somebody is dressing the deities and, you know, darshan's at, 7 o'clock, but they're only halfway done dressing the deities at 7 o'clock. And what's going on? No, but it has to be nice. It has to be this and that. So that you can say is they're engaged in a primary activity, but they're taking a secondary position as the value. Oh, I'm doing everything perfect. I didn't think it looked good and this and that. But it's no, you have to dress the deities by 7. So you have to get it done. And so with practice, they'll get quicker at it. But the point is it has to be done in the time, because that's then the process, because the devotees are there. They want to see the deities and you're not ready. So we have to see is that, like you said before, is that for the devotee, he's cutting the potatoes, it's his primary, but the primary is the devotion to cut them for Krishna. But he's overemphasizing the secondary on the quality of how he uses the knife and the cutting board and his fingers and the exact cut and everything. So he's not actually focusing on the primary, he's focusing on the secondary. Because if he knew it's for Krishna, they have to be done in 10 minutes. If he says, oh, I can't cut that fast, I can cut half of these vegetables in 10 minutes, then the cook, you know, will make an arrangement and, you know, cook cut themselves or get someone else to cut like this. He just says, I'm slow with this, right? And so then that becomes, he's seeing it in line with his, it's for the pleasure of Krishna. It's favorable what he's doing, that he's cutting potatoes, but that it's not on time. That's not favorable for Krishna. Because when you cook, there's an exact time when you have to put it in the pot. You put it before that or after it, you get a different effect. So since the kitchen is about cooking, then we have to see is that the cooking is the primary. Everything else in the kitchen is supporting that. Though it may be his service, but of that, doing that for Krishna is the primary element.
But to make it in the time is also regulation.
Also?
Regulation.
Because, and why is it a regulation?
I want to satisfy Krishna, I understand it, but...
Yeah. But I'm just saying, let's say you're cooking, and you make the chants, and after 30 seconds, that's when you put in the potatoes. But let's say you keep the chants going for 5 minutes, then put in the potatoes. Is it going to work?
Yeah, this I understand. I'm not basing...
So since it's for Krishna, you're cooking for that. Means that's then the detail of the cooking. But then on that, the potency that makes cooking work, that's there. And so there's rules that you can cook something for so long before it gets hot, you know, or burns, or if you don't cook it enough, or it's low temperature, it won't get the flavors or different things like that. So there's the potencies that are behind it.
Yeah, for example, I don't know. I can say, okay, I have to be in the time at the 7 o'clock because it's needed. That means because it's too much tough time, then okay, I will not take shower, I will not take the fresh cleaned clothes because I have to be in the time. Where is the balance?
The balance is taking a shower and putting clean clothes not part of the process?
It is, but it's a regulation. It's not a primary devotional service. I want to only understand this connection, you know, nothing else. It's also regulation to take shower, to take the pure clothes. It's not a devotional service like the primary thing, you know. It's
yeah, the primary is the devotion in which you're cooking, and because you have devotion, you want to use the secondary properly. Otherwise, people go into the kitchen and just do whatever they feel like. They just have a mood. But, you know, it's nice, but then they don't understand the potencies of Krishna and how things work. And so then they can't cook nicely for Krishna.
Yeah, I understand this. I want to only understand that this balance, because when you only focus, okay, everything is only about the Krishna, I don't take so much care about the rules, it's sahajya.
But if it's for, yeah, so therefore, then in that point, the person cutting the potatoes is either sahajya or a smarta.
Yeah, therefore, I want to know, because one thing which I don't understand was that if you are saying, okay, I am going to the regulation principles, then I am the best, you know. Okay, I understand if it's only secondary, it's bad. But when you are focusing for these regulations because you
but you're focusing Krishna, because it's for Krishna.
Yes, exactly.
But there are those individuals who think that it's an identity that I follow all these rules. I am good at following the rules. I am a good person because I follow all the rules. It's an identity. But for the devotee, I'm a devotee of Krishna. I'm servant of Krishna. Therefore, as a servant of Krishna, that's why I follow the rules. While in this other case, I'm following the rules because I am a follower of rules and I'm superior to most other people, because you find most people don't follow the rules that well. They may not be really seriously breaking, but they don't follow very well. And so therefore, those who can follow, like the smarta Brahmins, they consider themselves superior. I mean, literally, they consider themselves superior to anyone else on the planet. No question of it. Because they're clean, they're following the Veda. Everybody else is basically, see, in those societies, you have Brahmins and then everybody else is a Shudra. Even your Kshatriya or your Vaishya, they still call you a Shudra. Right? So that's what we're talking about. The smartas, it'll be, it's all about, I follow the rule and this and that. And then you have the person who likes to find fault, so he'll point out how everybody's not following, rather than his superiority of following. He's superior because he can figure out how everybody else is not following. So that's the smarta angle that we're bringing in. The sahajiya angle is, oh, it doesn't matter. It's just the feeling. I just have the bhav and all that. So that's the point, is that you're following the directions that the acharya has given because that pleases Krishna. And so therefore, that's the balance. I'm following all the different things because the acharya's sake, as Krishna says. I'm not following because it's not. That's why when it talks about varnashram, the acharyas only talk about us having to follow certain aspects of it. That's the daiva varnashram. So that becomes there. But they explain how it goes in a bigger, because you have to see how society functions and how you fit in with the society. But the point is then if you're saying, oh no, but because the guy stole something, so you've got to cut off his hand, and now how can we can't do that in modern society, so therefore we throw out varnashram, then that means they don't understand. Did the acharyas say that in the temple, if someone steals a Mangal Arati sweets, you're going to cut off their hand? You know, so then why are they using this argument, unless it's because they don't want to follow varnashram? In any case, that's for kings. Are you a king? No. You work in an office behind a computer, so it's not your job anyway. So, you know, you know what your service is. You stick to your service. And sticking to your service, you know, under authority, then things work, because it's a whole great you know, thing than the pastimes. Everyone's doing their particular part within the pastimes. You know, if everybody wanted to be, you know, the main part, there would be a problem, right? If everybody was simply dancing with Krishna, who's playing the music? If everyone is dancing with Krishna, who's sweeping and making it nice? If everyone's dancing, then who's setting up the bed and everything for Radha and Krishna when their dancing is over so they can take rest? You know? So that's the point, is that everybody has their part and they do that, and that's what makes the whole thing perfect. Yogamaya is arranging, the demigods are in the clouds, you know, watching and throwing flowers, and you know, everybody has their part. The moon is full like that, you know, the Vrindavan's making, you know, the trees are just perfect, the breeze is just perfect. So everybody's doing their service, and that makes the overall thing, because it's about Krishna. So then we know we're doing what our part, because it connects to Krishna. So someone's cooking, someone's, you know, there's another person washing the pots for Krishna, someone else is cutting the vegetables, someone else is running out to the market to pick up something that you need for the cooking. You know, someone else is, you know, on the altar and setting things up there and doing things like that. You know, so everybody's doing something, and that's what then makes it perfect. So the aspect that is done at all in devotion for Krishna, and then the particular forms that they use, then that is all what's, you know, the recommended forms and all that. So that's the point, that four of the principles aren't recommended. That's why they're not used. And the other ones of sadhana bhakti, those are used because those are recommended. So for us, is we follow because that's what the acharyas say. You know, if it's just, no, it's the rule, then the problem is, so, but why is the rule there? Who made, oh, it's in Shastra, okay, but why is it there? Where's Shastra? It comes from Krishna's breathing. So that means then this is how Krishna likes it to be. So we're following because it pleases Krishna, right? For those who follow it just because it's the rule, they want to go to the heavenly planets. I follow the rule, I did the work, I get the result. And so I did everything good, therefore I should go to the heavenly planet and enjoy myself. But the devotee says, no, I do everything right because it pleases Krishna. I'm not worried about heavenly planets and liberation because I'm serving Krishna, I'm already liberated. And I'm serving Krishna, I'm not engaged in the process of karma. Therefore, I don't have any results of the work. I mean, physical results you see, but there's no results in the cycle of karma. I won't get any reaction for that. I cooked for Krishna, therefore I don't have to worry about those vegetables coming back and, you know, and demanding, you know, their justice and everything. You know, so it's about, I do everything for Krishna, so I'm not on the platform of karma again. So that's the pure devotion. Now, when you say also the pure devotion is pure devotion, when you say that means what's always happening. Right? So someone on the platform of Baba is always engaged in pure devotion. Someone below that occasionally is in, you know, the neophyte now and again, the Madhyama a little bit more, but the Uttama is always engaged. So it's not that there's not times of pure devotion. Let's say the devotees are at the Kirtan Mela and they're really absorbed in the Kirtan and not, they're on platform of pure devotion. But as soon as the Kirtan's over and the Kirtan leader changes, oh, I don't like him, and they leave. So then, you know, so that's the point, is it's not steady. It's like in meditation. You have those five levels of meditation that Patanjali defines and probably gives. And then you're going to have the, I can't remember the names, but they basically mean occasional, and then regular, then, you know, then focused, then fully absorbed, and then samadhi. So the point is that you're trying to get to that platform where you're in samadhi. So when you're always absorbed, then you can take part in Krishna's pastimes. Because being that absorbed means Krishna doesn't have lapses of consciousness. He is consciousness. So if you're going to be involved with him, you have to be always focused on him, just as he's always focused on the devotee. Then you have. So before that, you're trying for that. That's why you see is that there'll be something that it's mixed. So that's what we'll say. It's mixed devotional service is not there. So we're talking about it's not pure devotional service because it's mixed. And if it's mixed too much, it won't move forward really. You know, because if I give you one bite of food every 3 hours, will you call that a meal? No, but it's food, you're eating. But when it all happens in 15, 20 minutes or half an hour, if there's lots of talking and something like that, you'll call that a meal. So in the same way is that if it's not moving forward, you know, nicely, then you'll say, well, that's not devotional service, because devotional service means it's about Krishna trying to please Krishna. So Guru Prabhupada is talking more about the mentality. Mentality is what defines that. My mentality is that I want to do this for Krishna and all that. So that's going to be the point. Does that work?
Yes, Maharaj. Yes. Okay. I understand this point. I only wanted to know this balance between these two points.
Yeah. Well, for us, the balance is what the acharyas give.
Yeah.
Because Shastra is like an encyclopedia. It gives every rule for everybody in every situation. Then you're going to have, okay, within all this, then you're worshiping all these different personalities. Then you're going to be Vaishnava. You're going to worship Vishnu. And so then that regulates that you don't have, like you see the Shris, they don't worship demigods, don't deal anything with demigods and anything like that. So it reduces it down. And that, and you know, the Madhuas will respect the demigods, but they don't worship them. But the Shris have nothing to do with them. They won't even, they don't disrespect, but they don't respect. You know, if they're going by a temple, they won't top and like that and go. Madhuas will go because they know this is a manifestation of Krishna's potency, but the Shris don't. Right, so it brings you to that, and then because they want to go to that particular aspect, then they have their particular things that they're very strong on, right? And so then as Gaudiyas, since it's about Goloka, right, not Vaikuntha, then the aspect of sweetness, so that means it has to be even more on the platform of that spontaneous consciousness, because the Vaikuntha, you know, you maintain all the different festivals at all the right times and all that in majesty, then it becomes a very good way to express. But when you're dealing with these more subtleties of just the sweetness and very, very fine points, then it doesn't require as much of the of all those different rules, but then the mood has to be right. And so we see is that the mood has to be very strong, and then the form that's used is more, how you say, it's not as emphasized. So in other words, we're emphasizing the primary, and the secondary naturally comes along with that because of the descending. If you have something where the secondary is the natural form of the primary, like we see with the Vaikuntha, then the two go together. Like I think for the Shris, when they say Dasyam in the Shravana Kirtana Smarana Vandana. So Dasyam to them means following your duties in Varnashram for Krishna. But Rupa Goswami, seeing Nectar Devotion, says that's not how we'll define it. It's having that mood that I am servant and serving. Like, and they have that also. But the point is for us, the Varnashram, it takes more of a back seat in serving the Lord than that. We follow it, but it doesn't become a focal point. In other words, it's just something you do, just like, you do something and then you touch something and afterwards you wash your hand, but we don't make it into a focal point. It's just something you do. You know, it's just like you're riding a bicycle. You're putting your pedals and moving them like this, but you don't have to focus on it. But you see someone new learning the bicycle, they have to move that, you know, the wheel, things like that, balance, you know, it's all at once. But, you know, when you're good at it, then you're focusing on why you're riding the bicycle. So it's just a matter. So for us, because we won't know the difference between all this, we only know the mundane perspective. So we won't know what's the difference here between, you know, the different Vedic things, what's Vedic, what's Pancharatra, what's Bhagavat, what's the balance. So therefore, we follow what the Acharyas give us. And so that is then seen through the, and Rupa Goswami says, you view the previous Acharyas through your Acharya. So in other words, through the founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, we view all the instructions of all the others. So what Prabhupada says, you know, that will be the main way we'll look at it. And then the details that the acharyas mention, we put into that context. That's then how we get the balance. We just stick to what Srila Prabhupada says, and then when we're dealing with what the acharyas are saying, we see it in that context. And that mood that Srila Prabhupada gives and those recommendations, then that's what we try to do.
Yeah, thank you, Maharaj. That's
okay.
Clear.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, very good. Very good. Hare Krishna. Okay, so then, okay, finishing this purport. It is therefore one's bound in duty, by refraining from the endeavor to know, to try to gain the experience of the transcendental by the practice of pure devotion. Right? So what he's saying here is that it is one's duty, bound duty, you're bound to this duty, that you're not trying to understand devotional service from a speculative point of view. You're trying to understand devotional service by practicing devotional service. The experience that one has in devotional service is gained through practicing devotional service. I don't sit back and analyze it and try to understand the experience, because you can't. Understanding saying that, oh, but we can explain the experience and all that, that the sahajiyas do that. I will explain it to you. I'll give it to you, all this and that. That's the sahajiyas. No, you know that this is what they do. Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan are enjoying their pastimes, but that enjoyment, we can't speculate on it, what that is, or understand it by academics. It's by doing devotional service. Then it said that then the devotional service will manifest itself. Then you'll understand. Then you'll get the taste. You know, the example is given of the bee on the outside of the honey bottle. You know, it's trying to get the taste. So if they speculate about the taste, it's this and that. No, it's by tasting that you'll know. So there's a process to get at the honey, but it's not by licking the outside. It's by opening the top. So by following devotional service, then it will work. So that's Brahma Samhita 537 per part. Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's allusion to the salve of love in the preceding paragraph is no coincidence. It in fact anticipates the very next shloka of Brahma Samhita, which states the qualification required to perceive the Lord at all, not to speak of receive darshan in his most confidential pastimes. Okay, so that takes us to verse 38, which then has been labeled here, the salve of love.
On that previous point that we were discussing with Radha Priya Prabhu, can you then say that the I'm trying to think of the word, like the utilization of the rules is understood when we understand through the previous acharyas about its connection to Krishna and devotional service to Krishna?
Yes, because otherwise, if you don't understand the connection, that's what makes smartas. They follow the rule because it should be done, so that's the mode of goodness, but they don't know why it should be done. You know, they may give, oh, if you do this, then you get this piety and you'll go to this, you know, heavenly planner. You do this, you'll get a nice body, or this, you'll get a nice fragrance, or things like that. They can explain that, but they don't know why those would be done. Why would they be important? Why is going to the heavenly planets better than being here? You say, well, it's more sense gratification, but you're more following Krishna's rules. The heavenly planets, they're all devotees, you know? And so then that's the point that they're there. Only devotees go to the heavenly planets, right? Does that make sense? The demigods that control the universe, the 33 million, they're all devotees. You're not going to have non-devotees, in the universal administration. So they're there because then they're following because the creation that Brahma has then expanded. And why is he doing it? Because it's for service to Krishna, to please Krishna. And why is Krishna doing that? Because he wants to give an opportunity for the living entities to come back to him in the spiritual world and engage in loving pastimes there. So you see that whole thing, then that means then it's becomes very nice. But otherwise, if it's just it's the rule, yes, it's the rule, but why is the rule there? So it's not that by saying, oh, but you're not seeing as primary, you're seeing only the secondary. It doesn't mean the rule is not good. It's just it being good is because it's connected to Krishna. That's what makes it good. Right? You know, if you're making an offering but not offering it to Krishna, you're offering it to some other demigod, that you made an offering, but you didn't make it to Krishna. So the offering has to be to Krishna. So therefore, whatever we're doing it for Krishna. That's the point. So trying to do things for Krishna, that makes everything very nice.
So then we can also say, like, from maybe the example of like bathing, for instance, may be seen as not as important as the direct service, but then it's part of Abhigamana, so it is part of devotional service, no?
Yes, yes. And also is that the point is Krishna is the supreme pure, so you worship him in a state of purity. Right? You know, so you get the body and what you have here as pure as it can get. In the spiritual world, then everything's pure, so you don't have to worry. But it's not that they don't wash their hands or wash the vegetables or all those things there. It's just part of the process. Krishna likes that process of purity. Just like he likes the process of interaction with devotees, or the process of walking and getting somewhere, you know, or playing on a musical instrument and makes sound. It makes, you know, he blows on his flute and it makes music. You know, so Krishna likes those things. So that's why then we use them, because it pleases Krishna. Because our nature is to serve Krishna.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore we're taking bath because you become pure for then serving the Lord. But the bath itself just makes the body healthy and all that. You can also take a bath for you know, going out to the nightclub. So there, it was only because people will perceive you not dirty, and so you have better chances there. But here it's that, no, you're doing it for Krishna. So it's not that you would drop these other things, because it's there, because it's a package. It all goes together.
Like elements that will become part of the complete process.
Yeah. So the bigger it is, the more you see. Mm-hmm. Just like the president will see that the deity worship is going on, and Sankirtan is going on, the taking care of the devotees is going on, you know, community preaching is going on. He sees all that. Now, let's say the head pujari, he's going to see the deity worship, and therefore then he has the six, you know, offerings a day, this, that, blah, the artiks. So then he's going to see that I have to get all this done. Then he's going to have pujaris under him who are going to be, this one does this artik, this one does this offering, this one does this cooking, this one wakes the deities, this one puts to sleep. They may only see that. They may understand it's in the bigger, but they're not necessarily relating it to the whole thing, because they do their artik, they go home. They're not worried about who does the next artik. Then within that, the pujari is doing, they may have assistants who they're going to be, you know, like that, washing pots, clean, you know, cutting vegetables, or, you know, grinding spices, or whatever it is that they're doing. And so they only see that much. So yes, that's their service on the tactical platform. I mean, the technical platform. Then on the tactical, it'll be that, you know, the cook and all that, the pujari is getting that done. But on the operational, that's the president's thing. But then that all has to be seen in line with Krishna. So for each one, like Raghunath just said, this, yeah, it's his primary thing is cutting this, but for Krishna. But it has to fit into these bigger and bigger things, because there is an overall position. So that's why then they have the line of authority in that. So he knows, yes, I have to do this in 10 minutes. So either he has to figure out how to learn to cut quicker, or, you know, you get other people to help. Or he's not good at that. The guy at washing pots is good at cutting vegetables. Let him cut the vegetables, and the other guy can wash the pot. So instead of taking an hour to wash the pots, he takes an hour and a half, 2 hours. It'll still work.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of how much you're seeing. right? And Krishna sees everything. So everybody's service connects to Krishna. That's why even the simplest service is connected back to Krishna, because Krishna sees everything. Yeah?
Yeah, thank you.
Salve of love, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena, santas sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti, yam shama sundaram achintya gunaswarupam, govinda mari purusham tamaham pajami. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, a beautiful dark complexion, filled with inconceivable qualities, whom the devotees constantly see in their mind during samadhi permeated with prema. Here, Jiva Goswami explains that seeing the Lord is not a matter of mundane vision, which depends on physical proximity. Quote, though Govinda lives in Goloka, he is also available in other places. The devotees see that form of inconceivable qualities, achintya gunaswarupam, by eyes covered with the ointment of prema. Premanjana churita, during samadhi, bhakti vilochanena. With such eyes, they see that form in their minds, hridayeshu, like a reflection, whose source is far away. Right? So in other words, like that source far away, like you have a pot of water, the sun's in the pot. The sun's very far away, but you can see it in the pot. Right? So because of their absorbed in Krishna, therefore they're seeing Krishna. Though he's far away, but at the same time, he's there like a reflection. But it's him. That's the point. Him and his reflection are non-different. Yeah? Okay. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur similarly explains the limitation of our material eyes. The Shyamasundara form of Krishna is his inconceivable simultaneous personal and impersonal self-contradictory form. True devotees see that form in their purified hearts under the influence of devotional trance. The form Shama is not the blue color visible in the mundane world, but is the transcendental variegated color affording eternal bliss and is not visible to the mortal eye. When Krishna manifests himself in Braja, both the devotees and non-devotees saw him with this very eye. But only devotees cherished him, eternally present in Braja as the priceless jewel of their heart. Nowadays also the devotees see him in Braja in their hearts, saturated with devotion, although they do not see him with their eyes. The eye of devotion is nothing but the eye of the pure, unalloyed spiritual self of the jiva. The form of Krishna is visible to that eye in proportion to its purification by the practice of devotion. When the devotion of the neophyte reaches the stage of bhava bhakti, the pure eye of that devotee is tinged with a salve of love by the grace of Krishna, which enables him to see Krishna face to face, right? So that's the point of that stage of bhava bhakti. Then one is able to see it. So that's why we're trying to get to that platform, because then in that platform, now you can properly see and move forward in developing your love for Krishna, right? So that's why that's there. So it's safe to say that, oh, no, that's the Hajj. No, no, that's the platform we function from. And before that, we function from this platform, wherever we are. The sum and substance of the shloka is that the form of Krishna, who is Shyamasundara, Natavara, best dancer, Muralidhara, holder of the flute, and Tribhanga, triple bending, is not a mental concoction, but is transcendental and invisible with the eye of the soul of the devotee, under trance, Brahma Samhita 538. So then the devotees, by the Lord's grace, is able to, you know, by that devotion, then is able to perceive the Lord. Right? Okay, we'll end here for today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Gaur.